So last week, I invited you to go to chapter 10 of Hebrews, and today I'm going to take verse 1 again very briefly. But before I go to Hebrews, the reason of Hebrews is this word at the bottom of the screen, is the word preeminence, is the word superior, is the word supremacy, is the word that God is over everything. Especially in Hebrews, Hebrews is given in a context where when you're going to the deepest of suffering and the deepest of sorrow and the deepest of grief, it's not that you just want a God who exists, because people love to debate whether God exists or not. But I told you before, it's about a God who cares in the middle of whatever is going on in life. So for us, I want to take this time to simply say thank you to all of you as a church. My mom went to be with our Lord Jesus on Friday, and it's been a 2-year process of battling cancer and a bunch of treatments, a bunch of trips to MD Anderson in Houston, and God's preeminence, God's sovereignty chooses and simply gives her the ability to be a woman who learned how to persevere. So she persevered to the end. But the reason why she persevered, and this is why it makes the experience special, and I take nothing away from my mama, she was a firstborn. She was an only child. God knows she was a strong will. God have mercy. She was a strong will lady. So I'm not surprised that she persevered. But looking back and seeing the journey, the reason why she persevered is because God chose to preserve her. So at the end of the day, it's God's sovereignty, God's preeminence. Hebrews is written in that context. For you as a church, for you as my brothers and my sisters, you guys have become family to me, and you have overwhelmed my family, my kids, my wife, with so many texts, so many phone calls that I'm calculating, I'm creating a timeline, and within the next 2-3 days after the funeral is tomorrow, I'll be able to respond. I haven't responded hardly to anybody because there's been so many things going on, but you know, Hebrews is given in that context of grief and difficulties and persecution and craziness. So when you go through some of the most difficult times in human history in your life, again, you hunger a God who is not karma, who is not just fate, who is not just, you know, casual things. You want a God that is in control, that is sovereign. And how that displays for me, again, is Hebrews. The Bible describes this whole process from last week, if you were not with us. It's this whole conversation of how God portrayed, gave his sovereignty, his preeminence through human language. So he gives us something that was given to many communities, many countries, many nations around the people of God. So the law, the Ten Commandments, is not a unique way of, you know, God expressing. Many God and goddesses and deities back then, outside of Judaism, they have given Decalogues or Ten Commandments. But for the first time in human history, never before in human history, the law was not given so people can relate to God. The law was given out of the relationship with God. So the book of Exodus, chapter 19, the book of Exodus, chapter 20, God tells the people of God, because you are my people, is that I'm giving you the law. Except, as you and I know, that happens to all of us, they make the mistake to see the law as the wind, which implies they got to the place where they took the law and they worshiped the law. Well, that was a problem, because Hebrews sees the need to explain that the law was simply a sign towards the good things. And when you embrace the God who is worthy of our worship, and He receives our worship through his commands, is the God that reminds us that the good things in life are defined by him. Which, by the way, the good things in life for us is a baby boy born in a manger. The good things of life is 33 years of obedience and perfection. The good things of life is the ability that we understand that as much as we embrace the sacrifices and the commitment of a year after year after year, the law was never given. The law was never given for men to become perfect. Now, man needs to be perfect to relate to a perfect God. See, God in the scripture says that you must be holy because I am holy. So this concept of perfection for us became a loophole that eventually what happened is that we were not able to draw near to the worship of God. Now, here is where I want us to remind ourselves about Christmas, because it's so important. What the law is going to remind us that in this life, this word is unavoidable. Everybody worships. You were created for worship. You were designed to worship. The issue is not whether you worship or not. The issue is who is the object of your worship. And based on the scriptures, based on the law of God, you are either going to worship God or you're going to worship self. How do I know this? Genesis chapter 3. In Genesis chapter 3, the previous two chapters is God being worshipped through the fellowshipping, through the stewardship of creation, through the relationship between a man and a woman and having children. But the moment Adam and Eve wanted to be like God, worship self, the first thing that happens, and you know the story, there is murder between the two siblings. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that sad and broken? So all that I'm saying is that the number one threat to your own joy, the number one threat of your own fulfillment is you. It's I. Because the moment that Adam and Eve chose to worship self, just like Satan worships self, is the moment that the law became a curse. The law became detrimental. So for us this morning, just so you know where we're going, Christmas. The whole deal about Christmas, worshiping God, is nothing else but simply God being satisfied, pleasured. It's the God who finds fulfillment through the birth of Jesus. I would love to tell you that Christmas is about salvation for humankind, which it is. It is. But salvation is the result of a God that is satisfied. How do I know this? Once again, because this is the God that he desires a relationship with creation, with people, with humanity. But because he's holy, again, God is perfect. God is the God who cannot depend on human performance. He has to reject humanity for his own sake. And when I tell you that Christmas is about the God who is satisfied, and again, you're going to struggle with this, and that's fine. I struggle with this, and I don't have enough time to explain this. That's why you need to come back Sunday after Sunday, and we elaborate this. But the one thing that you need the most, that I need the most, is a God who is satisfied. Because as a 47-year-old, I can tell you that I lived long enough to try to pleasure myself, and it hasn't worked. I have tried to satisfy myself. I have tried to dissect, to put into a specific view and trends and stages of life. Now I'm going through a different stage. Mom is not here with us anymore, you know, physically. It's just multiple things. And I always find a justification about pleasing myself. And at the end of the day, I don't know if you ever read the book of Ecclesiastes, Vanity of Vanities. Everything is meaningless. Why? Is it because life is pointless? No, because life is a person. Life is the Son of the living God. Is Christ being born in Bethlehem? So I'm just telling you right now that the whole concept of this experience of Christmas is understanding that the number one need that you and I have is to have a God who is pleased, who is satisfied, because a satisfied God, the satisfaction of God is what I need the most. How do I know this? Well, give me a few minutes and I explain to you. So Hebrews verse 2, otherwise, in other words, if you choose to please yourself, if you continue this detrimental pattern, thinking that life is about you, if you continue this kind of an unspoken rule that I really love God, but in reality, I love the God who agrees with me, that I'm all for this whole Christianity as long as it works in my way, in my benefit. He says, otherwise, would they not have stopped, thinking about the sacrificial system, being offered those sacrifices? If God was pleased with the system would have stopped. For the worshipers, the people, would have been cleansed once and for all. But we know the story. and would no longer have failed. See, any time that you try to please self, this is where you end, because you and I know this. Sin always overpromises and underdelivers. Come on, come on, come on, come on. That's a parental, I mean, as a father, man, I don't know how to communicate that to my kids, because the tendency is to look, now mom is gone, but I wasn't the perfect child, obviously. But by the way, I didn't rebel with my parents when I was growing up, because they never gave me the choice. That's exactly why. Otherwise, I would have done it. But that's a different conversation for a different day, parents. Don't give them the choice. Anyway, so the issue is guilt. And he says, hey, the issue is not what you feel. The issue is not what you have done. I'm going to say that again. The issue is not your guilt, your sin. This is just the result. The issue is the fullness, the majesty, the glory of the God of the Scriptures. The issue is that guilt is the result of a God who is not pleased. The God who says that I love you so much. I love you so much that I have to provide the boundaries to protect you from self, first and foremost. To protect you from this tendency that your fathers and forefathers had, that you try to be like God. So he says, hey, after all, they continue to feel the guilt of their sins. And this is why he moves to verse 3 and says, but those sacrifices, they are simply annual reminders that God is not pleased. So please hear me say this once again. As broken as you may be, as dysfunctional as God knows I am, that's not the issue. We are not here simply so 2020 gives us a better version of ourselves. We're not in this place. We don't worship Jesus simply so we can get our best life now or ever, whatever the title of that book is. That's just grotesque heresy. That's not the gospel. See, the gospel reminds us that the issue that we have in our lives is not our behavior, it's our heart. That we were born with a tendency towards pleasuring self. That life is about what I think. Life is about my needs and my desires. Some of us, we call it marriage, right? It's crazy, it's broken. It is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away the God who is displeased. So I'm going to say this one more time. As much as the Bible constituted, installed, created, and God blessed the sacrificial system became broken, became manipulated because man tried to change his behavior without pleasing the God of the Bible. And I'm not against changing behavior, but here is where I want you to hear this, because here's the good news of the gospel. The good news of the gospel is that there is a therefore. Therefore, since the whole conversation, 2019, potentially, maybe your previous marriage, maybe now that you're facing whatever you're facing, you are ending up with this deal. In my case, based on Friday, she is gone because of the wages of sin is. In other words, physical death is the result of, does everybody agree with that? Do I need to explain that? But here's the beauty of the gospel, that this is not the end of the Bible, that death for us, physical death, is not the cessation of life. It's simply a transition of life. How do I know this? Because of a therefore. Because in the context of sin, in the context of brokenness, in the context that my mother is gone, I can preach the gospel today with the assurance that there's a therefore. And the therefore is not that when Israel changed and there was revival in the land, the therefore is not based that nobody else is going to die. See, the therefore is not based that now the world is going to be better. The therefore is exclusively based on a person. And the person is Jesus. It's Christmas. It's the baby boy born in a manger. So Jesus, what he does, this is mind-blowing. Because what he does, he takes a quote, look at the quotation marks, and he takes Psalm 46. This is Psalm, Hebrews is helping these people understand that Jesus, like we have said before, he has this beautiful windshield that he's moving life forward into a new reality. But his base on an old gospel message. Isn't that beautiful? I'm going to say that again. It's based on a rearview mirror that he quotes Psalm 46. Sacrifice and offering, Jesus is speaking, you, who's you? What is Christmas about? the pleasing of God. So Jesus is not speaking to Israel. Jesus is not speaking to the church. The church, Israel, you and I, family, all that, that's important. But we are at the end of the conversation because this is the beauty of that harmony between Jesus and the Father. The sacrifice and offering you did not. So when Jesus shows up, when Jesus comes into the world and is born out of Mary, I don't know if you remember this, but it's on the eighth day based on practices in the context of Judaism, on the eighth day that Jesus is circumcised. At the beginning of his ministry, following the practices, Jesus goes to John the Baptizer and says, I need you to, what's the point? Here's the point, that neither circumcision nor baptism will bring satisfaction to God. But circumcision and baptism in Jewish culture is the result of a satisfied God. What's the point? That the law is needed not as the means to salvation, but the result of salvation. So when people ask me, do I have to get baptized? It's like me saying, do I have to love my kids? Come on, I'm a Christian father, so I guess I gotta love these guys. No. It's not that I have to, it's that I have the privilege, the freedom, I have the ability that in spite of how dysfunctional family is, in spite of uncertainty, I get to be a part of a family. So translate that into this, because Jesus is basically saying, see, these brothers, these churches, these people, they made the mistake to look at God, and they will not begin with a please satisfy God. They begin with themselves, number one. Secondly, because they made it about themselves, that's when Jesus comes and says, let me just tell you guys that this is not working out. Because, see, through the sacrificial system, you can only come back and be restored to the first Adam's condition, which is innocence or forgiveness. Nothing wrong with that. Your innocence is needed. You got to be forgiven because God, the law exposes that we are lawbreakers. We're not just people who come from broken families and, you know, mistakes that we made and the future is uncertain. We are simply fellow strugglers. We have all sinned and we have been destituted. We have been disconnected from the glory of God. So that's what the law does. But the problem was not the law. The problem is that these people, they went through the systems, through the bulls and the goats and the blood and all that, but it never changed their lifestyle. So the moment that these people, 2,000 years ago, divorce theology from ethics, the moment they divorce, you know, doctrine, what they believed, to how they treated one another. And by the way, I mean, just this week, I mean, how crazy is our politics? Oh, goodness gracious. How broken is our country? How divided are we? Are we in trouble? Is the result of divorcing this? It's not because we are difficult people, although we are. It's not because we're broken, although we are. It's because we conveniently took our belief system, took our ideologies, our views of God, and divorced them from lifestyle. So in this case, see, the purpose was not simply forgiveness, but it was the righteousness, which, by the way, and you guys know that I do a parenthesis in every single sermon, whose lifestyle? Is that the better version of you? The best life ever now, according to that book? And I know I've been facetious, and some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm not going to apologize. This is the lifestyle of the crucified, the Jewish carpenter. This is why Jesus openly says, you did not desire. In other words, what Jesus is telling us this morning is that the one thing that God desires is the lifestyle of Jesus Christ. How you get access to the fullness of God is through the lifestyle of a Jewish carpenter. How do I know this? Because look at what happens. See, Jesus came to the world not to save people. The salvation of people is the byproduct that Jesus, what he did for how many years? 33 years. His mission was to please the Father. How do I know that? How do I know that Jesus pleased the Father? Because on the third day. So when mom died on Friday and people started coming with texts and calls and multiple people that knew her and walked with her fairly close to her whole cancer treatment deal. What you find in the common denominator of this 66-year-old woman, she was going to be 67 January 2nd, so she didn't make the 67. What you find is that she was able to experience the fullness of God, not because she was a better Christian or she was a faithful Christian, although she was. It's because she found pleasure. She found pleasure on how God was pleased with Jesus. Otherwise, you're going to go through life thinking that it's your mission to please God. And you're going to drive yourself crazy. You're going to drive those around you very crazy. And eventually, you and I will become callous, legalistic, unsatisfied, displeased. And then here's what happens at the end. You're going to fear death. And you're going to question your salvation. The assurance of the salvation of anybody is not based on your lifestyle. Is based on the style, the worldview of Jesus given and imputed to you. 33 years that at salvation, as you hear this week after week, there is a double imputation. You give Jesus your sin. You understand that the sacrifices, the blood shed, and all that has to do with your transgressions and my sin. We all have sinned before the glory of God. But at the same time, in that experience, is that we receive the pleasure of God. We receive the majesty of God. When he looked at Jesus on that Sunday morning, Resurrection Sunday is nothing else but God saying, this it. And the beauty of the resurrection is that it's been given to us. So now, Paul says that the interior man, the man in the inside, as the outside is going down, and it is going down, the interior man is experiencing the fullness of life. This morning, I just want to remind you that if you come back on Tuesday, we'll expand this thought, but I'll just tell you what happens when God is pleased. When God is pleased, that means that God receives glory. And when God receives glory, what you get is not a better earth. Although I want a better earth, although I want a better world and a better family and a better situation. But what you get, the win of you and I giving God the glory, pleasing God, is that you get in the midst of a broken earth. Why? Because peace for us is a person. Peace for us is the birth of Jesus Christ. Peace for us is not the absence nor the modification of a better life ever now. Is that if I were to talk to mom right now, she can share with me the peace. And she has discovered on Friday that peace is literally a person. His name is Jesus Christ. And this is why Jesus simply comes and says, see, you were not pleased, same verse, but now how you're going to find pleasure is that you, Jesus, speaking to the Father, is that you have given me a body that you have prepared for me. What's the point? This is simple. And I know this sounds a little controversial and it sounds a little crazy, but the point is this, that the only person who satisfies God is God. The only one who satisfies God is literally himself, because the God who is just and gave us the law, this is the justice of God. This is how God operates. In due time, 2,000 years ago, gave us the justifier. So it wasn't simply that we needed another prophet, another king, another priest that will tell us about the justice of God. For the first time in human history, Christmas is literally the God who was made flesh, and this God taught us. And this God preached to us. So when Jesus says, hey, a body you prepare for me is nothing else but the incarnation. So with burnt offerings and sin offerings, you again were not pleased. And I'm going to say this one more time. The issue is not, was never the law. Because the law is the manifestation of grace. I just told you this from the beginning. The difference between the Ten Commandments in the Bible and any other Decalogue or Ten Commandments in human history is that the law was given not so we can connect to God. It's the result of belonging to God. But obviously that creates a higher level of accountability to the point that this grace that was given, the people of God, you and I translated that into unfaithfulness. And the people of God was found unfaithful. Their unfaithfulness eventually displeased created the separation between God and humanity. This is why when we find Jesus, he did not get away. He did not, simply destroy the law or deleted the law. He became the fulfillment of the law. So Jesus, his faith in God was translated into faithfulness, that God found the pleasure, find completion in Jesus Christ. And Jesus simply ultimately comes and says, because my people have been unfaithful, because they corrupted themselves, because they manipulated the system, because they worship the system, because they make the system about themselves versus the God who needs to be pleasure, then Jesus had to say, Jesus, in due time, in God's sovereignty, in God's preeminence, in God's predetermined time, said through Mary, here I am. And the baby was born. Here I am. Jesus shows up. Here I am. And it is written about me in the Bible, in the scroll, that my purpose, why I came to this world, is not to save the world, although the world gets saved, but it is to, why? Because if you're sitting in this place and you are a follower of Jesus, the purpose why you are here is not to avoid hell and is not to go to heaven. Those things are included. The purpose why you are still taking your next breath, the reason why you were able to get up this morning, the reason why you are here is to do the will of God. The reason why you're here is to understand that this will is the incarnation of the God whose will is not the vehicle to make it your God, but because you belong to Him already, it's not that you have to do His will, it's that you are able, you have the freedom to stop trying to please self. Freedom to simply understand that in spite of the condition, in spite of how broken it may be where you are, you have been empowered with the supernatural ability to please God through Jesus Christ. That the driving force in your life is the understanding that although suffering and pain and dysfunctionality and chaos is a reality, it is in that context that I am called to do the will of my Heavenly Father. And that explains why when Jesus shows up, He is the God. He is God made flesh who begins a brand new race, who begins a brand new generation, who gives a brand new covenant. And for Mama, in my case, for the first time, she is experiencing the fullness of the will, of the person, of the character of God. My heart's desire is as you and I celebrate Christmas, as you and I are here, is that this year and next year, and whenever the funeral comes in your life, in my life, we were known by the 33 years of lifestyle of Jesus, which is the will of God for every one of us. Would you pray with me for a second?